The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Ready to experience something new? All Trails helps you find your next hike. Whether you're looking for something nearby or planning a trip, read reviews from real people like you to choose your trail and know what to expect. You can also download the map in case service gets spotty. Plan and experience your next hike with All Trails, the app for exploring the outdoors. Download it today and find your outside.
Hey gang, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and we are gonna move. We are gonna answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Anybody, anywhere, anywhere.
It's time to take command with former NFL tight end Logan Paulson.
This pass caught by Paulson, the tight end.
And from 106.7 The Fan, Grant Paulson.
Welcome in to Take Command with Logan Paulson. I'm Grant Paulson, the stretch run of the offseason. Give you three episodes a week. Please spread the word. Let Commanders fans know we are here, breaking the team down in great detail. And subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Logan, we're about 5 weeks away from an actual preseason game, which gets the juices flowing for me a little bit. We're 3 weeks away from the start of training camp. So we are almost at the finish line of the 2026 offseason.
Yeah, man, this is a tough time of year to be making content because you're kind of just waiting for everyone's kind of waiting for Christmas here a little bit, right? Like everyone knows the big event that's coming up and we're just trying to fill the day a little, which is awesome. But, I just can't wait, man. I think this season, I'm really excited about this season. I'm excited about the new coordinators. I'm excited about the new personnel moves. And it just feels a lot different than it did even the last 2 years. Like obviously year one, I was excited about Jaden Daniels, but this year I really want to see, you know, Adafe Owe, Caleb on Chason, Leo Chenal, Sonny Styles, Nick Cross, all those new additions kind of on defense, what that looks like. And then Jaden Daniels in this new system. Like there's just so many cool football storylines that I'm excited to kind of follow and just see what this thing looks like. So, and that starts obviously in 3 weeks. So
this is the deepest team for the Peters Quinn regime pretty easily. Deepest defensive team I remember Washington having in a long, long time. So yeah, there's plenty of reason for optimism and hope as a Commanders fan, as we close in on training camp. My big question, I guess, is, and the thing I'm most intrigued by as we close in, is how different will camp actually feel? You know, we're out there and we're around the team and at practices. Last year, I remember at one point, like saying to you on the sideline, like, this just does not feel like a grind like you want camp to feel. I think this could be different. I mean, Dan Quinn has gone about the whole spring differently. He's acknowledged they need to try to switch some things up. So I wonder if we're even going to notice it just standing on the sideline that practices are a little more arduous and that they are getting after it a little more.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, like, again, like some of the changes that they've kind of instilled this offseason and kind of the direction they want to go. I do remember that conversation last year. And it's so funny, man. Like I've had conversations with guys who go to a bunch of training camps, like someone from The Athletic mentioned this to me. It's like, man, you can feel a good practice. You can feel a team kind of setting in for, you know, a big season. And that's just never been my experience, man. Like maybe that's like something that you feel as a player. It's like, oh, I feel like this training camp's pretty hard. And then like the team's not very good. Or I feel like this training camp's not that hard. And I don't know how we're going to be, but you figure it out and you're a pretty good football team. It's one of those things where to me, it's not so much about the physical work. It's about how the team gels. And so when practice is hard, I always found it kind of galvanized the group a little bit better. Because again, you've kind of gone through something difficult. You've tested yourself mentally and physically. But again, like I said, I've been with teams that where it's like a cakewalk and you're like, man, we're not going to be very good. And you figure it out. So I really am curious to see what the changes look like. Cause even the OTA minicamp phase was a little bit different. We talked about that on the show, like where they've got the kind of the two spot practice. The young guys are kind of going 1,000 miles an hour. The older guys or the more established guys are kind of going through it like a walkthrough tempo. Like that's a difference, right? Everyone's getting the same amount of reps. Everyone's getting the same looks, just a different speed. So what does he bring, Dan, I'm talking about now, to this new training camp? And does it feel different? I would say emphatically, it's going to feel differently from the jump. Because you remember last year, man, like it was it was kind of gross. Like the offense just couldn't get anything going. The defense was just teeing off, coming downhill. And every practice felt super stagnant. There weren't any of those kind of wow moments down the field from the quarterback. There weren't any of those kind of breakout runs, you know, like with the running backs, things like that. And I do think that there is something to that. Like, you don't want the defense to just be absolutely annihilating the offense during that offseason phase, during training camp. And I think we're going to get to see that, you know, coming up here very shortly, like what that looks like. And I don't think it's going to look like that at all. I think it's going to look very, very different this year, especially with Terry being back, Chig on offense, some of those young guys appearing to take steps forward in the receiver room. So I'm curious to see what it looks like for sure.
It's funny you mentioned The Athletic, because I wanted to hit on something I actually saw their national NFL section write about, which was they took a player for every single team in the NFL, and it was kind of like the newcomer that you're excited to see or that's going to mean a lot to their team. Interesting storyline. And for Washington, The Athletic's Nikki Jabala highlighted Rashad White, 27 years old, former third-round pick, spent 4 years in Tampa, former college teammate of Jaden Daniels at Arizona State, has averaged around 50 catches per year. Looks like he's in line for a significant role in the backfield in some capacity, maybe as the third down back and pass catcher. But it got me to thinking about the exercise for you and I. So that's the question. Who is the newcomer to watch after they highlighted one for every NFL team? So I figured we could get one on each side of the ball. On offense, your newcomer to watch for the Commanders going into camp would be who?
Well, in our production meeting, I like yours first. So why don't we start with you and then we'll go from there. And I'll tell you mine.
Yeah, mine would be Chig Okonkwo. Yeah. I just think that, first off, he might be the biggest addition that they made. So it's cheating a little bit. But I think the plan for him in terms of volume and usage could be significant. I like the idea that you can move him around, use him as a plus-size wide receiver. I think David Blau is going to not just call his number, but maybe even do things to elevate him and maybe like build some looks through him. Why else go make him a priority? You can look at his numbers when he was in Tennessee and you could say, oh, this guy's never really been a dominant player. He's never put up huge numbers. That's okay. I mean, that's a first contract that sometimes happens, and then you pay the guy and bring him in and you view him differently. I think about Pierre Garçon with Washington when you played. You know, Pierre Garçon was viewed as an overpay when they gave him at the time. I think it was like $40 million or whatever. But they knew they were about to make him the most targeted receiver in the division, and he was going to lead the league in catches at one point in time. So I think Okonkwo, who's never caught more than 56 balls, is about to break out, and he's the guy on offense I'm most pumped about.
Yeah, not to be redundant, but I agree. I really like that pick in terms of a player that I think is going to have a lot of impact. Like, I like Nikki's pick too of Rashard White. I just get so confused about the backfield allocation, and especially during OTAs and minicamp, because it's not very clear, right? You don't get to see guys running with the pads on. You don't get to see kind of their roles just yet. With Chig, I think there's something there. I think you're going to see a guy who's going to get a little bit more burn. I think you have a coaching staff that's motivated to get him on the field. I think you see a guy who's got competitive toughness in line. And that's the big thing people always talk about with Fs, right? Are they good enough to stay on the field and run situations? And I do think he wants to do that. And I think he's strong enough to do that. And so if he can do that on, you know, in those running downs or those running looks, and you don't have to take him off the field for John Bates, for example, or Ben Sinnott or Colston Yankoff, I think he's going to be poised for a big year. And I think this staff, at least through conversations I've had, seems to understand how to get that done. So again, I've liked the guy from, you know, when we were doing our offseason evaluations in terms of free agency. So I think it's fantastic. And then I think you get into kind of a weird space with the offense where it's like, because Chig probably would have been my pick, I guess. But the thing about it is, like, there's not that many new additions. I just mentioned Rashard White, how I'm kind of on the fence about, like, what his role is going to be, even if he is the third down back. So I guess the guy that I'm most excited outside of Chig would be Antonio Williams. And, again, during OTAs and minicamp, we didn't really get to see him kind of blossom or kind of make a ton of explosive plays. Like, he was out there. He did some good stuff. He had an injury during minicamp for a little bit. They kept him off the field. They kept him on the side. But I just look at the route runner. I look at how David Blau, his exposure to Ben Johnson's offense, his exposure to Kevin O'Connell's offense, and how they utilize route runners. And I think that's something that's going to come to the forefront. Now, it might not happen week one. It might not happen in week four, but at some point this year, I think he's going to have a pivotal role in this offense, specifically on third down, finding touches. So that's kind of my guy. Again, I think, and probably for similar reasons as Chig, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, right? A guy that can win one-on-ones, has some route running nuance. Now it's different. Chig's more of like a horsepower, verticality kind of guy for the tight end position. But I do think they have like special abilities to separate, which is going to make them special, I think.
Every day that they don't sign a wide receiver, by the way, the chances of Antonio Williams helping a bunch and developing and becoming something right away goes up. I mean, that's the flip side of, like, are they going to add a wide receiver too? What is the plan there? Well, kids get to shine if you're not going out and getting a veteran. So I think that that is an interesting storyline to monitor as well. All right, defensive side of the ball, if we're ripping off of this athletic piece and the newcomer that we're most excited to see, like, who – there's a lot of options. Who's your guy there?
I mean, I just can't get past Adafe Owe. Like, I just can't get past, like, what he did with the Chargers and what his possible role and usage could be here. I mean, you see flashes and hints about what it can be, kind of looking at what they did with Greenlaw in Minnesota, and you're kind of like, okay, there's something here in terms of what this can be. You know what I'm saying? What his role could be, the kind of production he could have. And again, he's a freak, man. Like, watching him run around, like, the arm length, the size, the movement skills, like, even just watching defensive line drill work, like, I think he's a unique athlete. Like, we obviously had, like, Montez Sweat, Chase Young here, and those guys were unique freak athletes in their own right. But I don't think we've had a defensive line player move the way he moves in this organization, maybe ever. And I think that's something that I just can't get past, is the athlete, the physicality, the ascending role last year, and the way they use that kind of, like, that stud end in this defense is something that I think he's going to fit in like hand in glove. So I get really excited about him and what his role could be with this defense.
Nick Cross would be mine, top of head. He is a guy who had 266 tackles the last 2 years and runs a sub 4.440, and put him in the back end, let him fly around. It was just a one-year deal, kind of a not a lot of money, so I'll be curious to see, does he excel right away? Does he pick things up? Do they keep him around? But I like his game, and he was obviously a guy from the University of Maryland with local ties from Bowie, Maryland, former third-round pick. The other one I'll throw out there, and again, there's a million options on defense because they did so much, but you know how I feel about the linebacking core and just the overall intrigue about who's on the field, who isn't? Like Leo Chanel. Leo Chanel is as athletic a player as they've had at the position in a long, long time. And if not for Sonny Styles, that would be the story maybe of their defense, is like that he comes in here. Like, in a world where they didn't draft Sonny Styles, I'm just going to make something up, like they took Carnell Tate or whatever, their linebacking core would still be fascinatingly improved because of Chanel in that Bobby Wagner role and Luvu getting back to the second level. It just so happens now you throw Sonny Style, an action figure, into it, and they got a chance to, like, have a really unique group. But those two guys stand out to me too.
I'm a little surprised you didn't go Sonny Styles with this pick. Is there, like, you just are in on Nick Cross then as the addition here in terms of impact?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm excited about Nick Cross. I also think, like, Sonny Styles, we've talked about so much. He's the top 10 pick. He's going to fly around. I want to see how quickly he can start and get on the field and really be an all down guy. But yeah, a little bit of a deeper cut, honestly, just to talk about something that maybe hasn't been. But I think Nick Cross has been slept on. I really believe he's going to be super important.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, I mean, it was so funny. Like when you watch the film, like, you're like, oh my gosh, he can do some stuff at the line of scrimmage, second level of defense. Like we've talked about that a lot. But the thing that really like shook me is when I met him in person for the first time. Like he is put together. He looks like a Ninja Turtle, man. Like just really strong. And like to see, and the other thing is you mentioned the speed. Like I don't really think of safeties who run like that being built that way. And so like he's got the ability to like set an edge. He's got the ability to fit a run. He can blitz. Like, in terms of what Minnesota was doing, like that piece and that flexibility he brings, I'm with you 100%. Like that might be the guy we're talking about, you know, week 10, where we're like, man, he's leading the team in tackles. He's got a bunch of pressures. Like he could be that movable chess piece. And for a defense, we've talked about this a ton, but that, you know, prioritizes flexibility. Like he brings a lot of that. Like he's going to play, I'm sure, play a little linebacker, play a little kind of edge, right? He's going to play a little post safety. Like he's going to do a lot in terms of alignment. Now, in terms of what they call that position, like I don't know, but just in terms of spacing, like he's going to make this defense very multiple and very dynamic, which is, I love that you brought that up as like a deep cut for him.
Is there a normal name for a position like that? Like what have you seen or heard?
So I think the thing that I keep coming back to is we had this conversation, and which was good, is like this modular element to the defense, right? So everyone talks about, oh, this is a 3-4 spacing, this is a 4-down spacing, this is, you know, a bare front, this is a 6-2 or whatever kind of front we're talking about. And what I've noticed is that teams, and this is not just with Minnesota, but defenses throughout the league are kind of saying like, hey, we're going to be in a 3-4 spacing, but one of our Sam linebacker, for example, is going to be Nick Cross, right? And kind of he's going to be our nickel player. And I think we've talked about this too with like Kalavon Chaisson, with Leo Chenal, maybe even Sonny Styles at some point. Just having that Sam linebacker is also your nickel, is also your, so it's a linebacker body, it's a defensive end body, it's a third safety. So having people that you can kind of roll in there with multiple opportunities and multiple roles is going to be special. So that's one example, right? Then you get into like a 5-1 spacing where you have kind of an odd spacing and one linebacker, and then they bring down that third safety to be another linebacker, right? So I think there is some multiplicity and flexibility that we've seen from Minnesota, which I'm assuming they're going to bring here. And it just is like an opportunity to kind of say, hey, this is a different body type. Like, how do we target this run? And when you have a guy like Nick Cross, like that flexibility becomes super important, because like on protections, it's like, well, is he a linebacker or is he a safety? Because that affects offensive protection rules, right? And so I think that's something that is just going to make it hard for opposing defenses or offenses to kind of target, to get keyed in on. And because of his physical kind of mentality, I think it's going to put this defense in a really good spot.
Positionless football, and especially defense, feels very new to me still.
Yeah.
It's like we're evolving in the way the NBA did in a sense where like, it's just five guys and their wings and they can play all over and defend multiple positions or whatever. But like when you played a decade ago, was this happening at all in a way that we got less attention or didn't talk about it, or like maybe it wasn't as obvious? I mean, I refuse to believe it was always just the same alignment every week. Like there were clearly had to be teams mixing things up and moving guys around.
I'd say it was much more traditional when I played. Like you're going to get, hey, you're going to get an over front, you're going to get an under front, you're going to get an odd front, you're going to get a bare front. And I remember kind of in year two or three, like Dallas started messing with like, hey, we're an odd personnel, right? But we're actually in an even front spacing. And then that kind of messes up your target rules, right? So even though so it's some stuff that Minnesota does now. And then I remember going up to Green Bay in 2013, and they were in dime all the time, which is, you know, what is that, 5 DBs? No, 6 DBs. And like targeting runs was a big pain in the butt. So for example, on this run we had called, you know, 18 zap, it's me and Fred Davis run the wing, right? So we know we have the defensive end of the Sam linebacker. And then I have the third element, right? Or so it's really the tackle, the two tight ends have the end, the Sam to the mic, right? But when you get up there, you're looking at the front and you're like, well, there's a bunch of 20 numbers out here, right? There's a 20 at the mic, there's a 20 at the Sam, there's a 20 at the corner, and there's a 20 at the safety. And so you kind of had to think about your script, like your prep for the week, and be like, okay, 24 is the Sam in this look, 22 is the mic, 28 is the safety, and you know, 21 is the corner. And so then that affects how you target the run. And it was just, it added a level of communication. And so when you talk about positionless football, I immediately think about Green Bay. Like, we were in base, two big tight ends, and they were in dime. And it made it hard to target the run. I think about Dallas and kind of how they're shifting around. And now teams have taken it to the next level. Like, to get ready for the season, I've been watching all these defensive front videos, kind of installs by coaches. And it's so interesting watching just how much more aggressive and much more dynamic these coordinators are defensively. And I think a lot of it is just to kind of provide some consternation to the offense.
Logan Paulson, Grant Paulson, take command. So then, what was preventing coordinators from doing this? Was it that just they hadn't thought of it? Like, this is an antiquated time of 100 years ago and nobody knew about cell phones? Or to me, that there had to be like a fear of the size of like, I'm not going to get smaller and run dime if they're big. Like, it hasn't been that long for the league to have changed that much. So why wasn't more of this happening 10 years ago?
It's a great question, and I'm sure you could talk to like football historians and they'd give you different answers. To me, it's the advent of the really dynamic, smaller slot receiver. Because like, obviously, if you stayed in base defense with that guy on the field, like, you would just get diced. Absolutely, right? And then all of a sudden, you see teams kind of say, oh, we're going to not go super small at the slot. We're going to stay a little bit bigger, right? And all of a sudden, we can do some of our 12 runs with this 11 personnel on the field. And defensive coordinators are like, okay, like, we can't handle some of these runs. We can't handle some of these coverage responsibilities. We need to be a nickel a little bit more, right? And it's funny, like, I tell this story all the time, but it was really informative for me for this thing you're talking about. As I remember going back and watching at Titan University, Dallas Clark, one of my all-time favorites, comes and is presenting like kind of how they operated, right? Because they were in 12 personnel and he's the F. So he's like the adjuster piece of the offense. And the team they were playing, I think it was Seattle at the time, they're just in straight cover three. And nobody runs cover three to 12 anymore because the F is so athletic. Think like Colston Loveland, think about George Kittle or Kyle Juszczyk in certain looks, right? These kind of guys that can attack the seam.
And really, explain why you wouldn't do that, because in cover three, the F is defended most of the time by who?
Well, it's most of the time by a linebacker, but it's more of just a spacing thing, right? So let's say you run four verts to cover three, right? There's only three players in the back end to cover four players. And so all of a sudden, just by taking the F and putting him in the slot, that post player now has to cover the tight end and the F to the field. And you have in cover three, you're typically in an eight-man box. So the other safety is down to the line of scrimmage. And so Dallas Clark would literally just run straight up the field and Peyton Manning would just rip him the football because teams would stay in base to 12 because that playmaker, they didn't think of him as a pass catcher. They thought of him as a blocker. And so all of a sudden now you see like, it's the same thing with Shannon Sharpe. Like, Shannon Sharpe is a stud, one of the best of all time, but he was getting such simple looks because they treated him like a tight end, like in the blocking surface, as opposed to a pass catcher. Now defenses are like, okay, well, their offenses are kind of going in this direction where we're saying, you know, we need, that F piece is kind of an adjuster in the offense. Defenses are saying we're more flexible in nickel. So let's stay in nickel a little bit more. Let's stay a little bit smaller because now that nickel player can cover a tight end and also can fit the run in some of these cases. And so two things. One, the NFL game has changed. And then also the college game has changed. Like, it used to be really hard to find kind of those flex tweener pieces. But now every year people, like, think about the draft. People are talking about the flexibility of Sonny Styles, the flexibility of Nick Amon-Wari, like, and go down the board. You're getting all these kind of star hybrid players. Like, shoot, Fred Warner played safety in college and then they moved him to linebacker. So it's just one of those things where it's like the college game changed, the NFL game kind of adopted some college principles, and defensive coordinators needed to kind of catch up. And now, to kind of take it one step further, I think the thing you're seeing with Brian Flores' defense, you know, McDonald's defense, is now they understand that we can dictate more to offenses with our front, with our personnel, with our pressure packages than we ever could before. And I think that's why you're seeing this defensive resurgence. Is defenses now are disguised well, they're complicated, they bring a ton of pressure, and it's really hard offensively, like when I'm watching film, to figure out how you rule stuff out because there's so much variety and there's so much kind of variety in personnel and in terms of pressures and coverages. So it's a brave new world in terms of defensive philosophy.
Take command on a Friday, which means mailbag questions. We'll get to those next. It's Logan and Grant kicking it with you as we close in on training camp.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. As we approach America's 250th anniversary, now might be the time to go back and learn how we got here. With more than 200 episodes, you can binge your way, decade by decade, defining event to defining event, from the founding into the 20th century. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.